is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Chaos at the borders. Talk of taking away our Second Amendment rights. What's going on with our government today? What's going on in Texas at our borders that the media isn't allowed to talk about? Today we have two amazing guests. We have Lieutenant Randy Sutton, who Wounded Blue is an amazing organization. Check it out. And then today, right now, we're going to start with the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, Mark Krikorian. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Viewpoint This Sunday.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm seeing a lot of things. Senator Lee, one of my senators, well, my senator, because the other one's not a senator, Mr. Romney, is in Texas right now with the Rand Pauls and the other people. And so he's been Facebooking and Twittering to the people of Utah just how awful this is. And if this would have been under Trump, it would have been a whole different type of media coverage, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. Of course it would be. I mean, there's no question that the media, they have pretenses of, you know, being truth tellers and holding everybody to the same standard. But that's ludicrous. And if you saw this week's press conference, I mean, the first question, no, it was the second question, was, is this border crisis happening because you're such a great and decent human being and people are coming because you're a decent human being and Trump wasn't? I mean, it was almost a joke. It was like a Saturday Night Live routine, a parody of a press conference.
You know, one of the things that bothers me about immigration is there is U.S. Code Section 8 that talks about providing sanctuary. Anybody who does it, it's a felony. Yet our government thinks they're above the law. And the person sitting in the White House right now, Biden, I don't know who's actually controlling the White House, but the person sitting in the White House right now gave an open invitation for anybody who wants to violate our laws, yet swore an oath to uphold and defend our Constitution and our laws. Do you believe that that open invitation is what made this rash push on our border right now, and why Senator Lee said that a facility set to only handle 420 during COVID has over 4,200 and they're testing at a high positive COVID rate?
It wasn't just one thing that the president said. In other words, it's the whole stream of his campaign, all the things that he has done early in his administration, all of them add up. And in fact, even before Biden was nominated, we sent somebody down to southern Mexico in January of last year. So we're talking, 14 months ago now. And one of our analysts, former foreign correspondent and intelligence analyst, and he was down there talking to Central Americans who had come into Mexico. And they said, without being prompted, he didn't actually expect this. They brought it up. He said, you know, so what are you doing? What's going on? What are your plans? What's up? They said, all of them, we are coming to Mexico. We're going to bide our time here, tread water until Trump loses. And then we know that whoever beats him will let us in. So they didn't even have to wait for Biden. They were expecting this. And then Biden just adds on to it. In other words, it's an accumulative thing. And we saw that very early in the administration. I mean, literally, I think a couple of days after he was sworn in, there were hundreds of Cubans in Juarez, Mexico, on the other side of the border from El Paso, who had to wait there under the Trump's Remain in Mexico program, it was called, where you could apply for asylum, but you didn't get let loose into the country. You had to wait on the Mexican side. They were impatient. They were like, you know, this has taken too long for our hearing dates. So hundreds of them stormed one of the bridges over the Rio Grande into El Paso. Now, our guys, DHS guys, blockaded them so they didn't get across. but they occupied the bridge for most of a day, and they were chanting, among other things, Biden, Biden, Biden. They essentially have been promised that they're going to get let in and get let go. And so, you know, what did the Biden people think was going to happen after all of that? And then he rolls back important Trump policies. Central Americans aren't stupid. They realize there's a window of opportunity. They're going to take it.
You know, one of the things that disturbs me is that presidents think they can create law. And this president has mentioned that he's going to change the rules of the Senate, the rules that have been in place for 200 plus years. He's going to automatically change because he doesn't want the filibuster. He doesn't want anybody else having a say. He doesn't care about legal American citizens. That's pure and true. I'm a first generation. My parents immigrated here and lived their whole life here on green cards. So I'm not anti-immigration. I'm pro-legal immigration. And if the laws need to be changed, we need to fix them through the correct process, through Congress. He's going to take that all away and just unilaterally invite these people in because it adds to their voter base.
Yeah, in the long run, it does. But even in the short run, there's still an appeal for it. I think there's, you know, the Democratic Party has genuinely radicalized on immigration. And this was something that was happening even before Trump. And so now what used to be a fringe view is now the mainstream view among elected Democrats. And that is that we don't really have any right to keep people out who want to come here. If somebody shows up at the border, we kind of have to let them in. That's their view. And that's what you're seeing play out.
Except our people's house in Washington, they'll build a fence around.
Well, that's a different thing, yeah. fences do work, apparently. You know, they've shown it. So anyway.
For members of Congress, it works, not for countries. You know, your center does amazing things. It pulls a lot of people. What is the overall legal Americans' viewpoint on what's going on today?
Well, I mean, there's no question that people are souring on immigration in general, on amnesty for illegal immigrants who are here. The wall is getting a lot more popular. And that really does, that's an indication of how, polling on immigration does, I think one commentator called it thermostatic. It kind of changes depending on what's going on. And one of the reasons I think Trump maybe didn't get as much of a bounce politically out of some of his successful efforts at controlling the border is that once immigration is lower, and immigration, in fact, even legal immigration was down some in the last couple of years of Trump, illegal immigration was down a good deal, the problem doesn't hit people in the face as much anymore. And so it's just not a high priority. And so people are like, yeah, okay, I guess we'll give people amnesty and I guess we don't need more wall. And then, you know, Biden and his crew come in, break the thing that Trump had set up. And, you know, Trump hadn't solved everything, but he had stabilized things at the border. They were, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it was working. Biden's people came in and broke it. And now people who, you know, sort of the broad middle of people who don't really follow politics and policy closely are saying, wait, what's going on? You know, where's the wall? You know, I mean, so viewpoints, opinion shifts, and it's clearly shifting away from the Democrats because of the consequences of their policies.
I actually went to lunch with my business attorney today, and he was talking about, you know, he represents a lot of clients and there's a lot of money coming in from foreign countries, and they're finding ways, creative ways around immigration laws to get green cards, to get citizenship. And there's a lot of people in Europe that have to wait a long time. So do we have some improvement that could be made? Yes, but that needs to be made through the laws. Why has never the Republicans or Democrats fixed this issue? Is it just too big of a political hot button that they want to utilize every election season, that they just don't want to put common sense laws into place to protect our state, to protect our country, to protect our businesses? Do they just not care? Is it just too big of a political topic that nobody really wants to address it?
I mean, I think maybe the last thing you said is probably right, that it's so big that there's always these conflicting interests and it's hard to put coalitions together. Let me explain one of the things you've seen among the Democrats. One of the reasons the big amnesty, let me put it this way. One of the reasons there's been efforts at increasing tech visas, you know, for tech companies. I actually, for the most part, think that's a bad idea because it's not just best and brightest Albert Einstein. Those people can get in anyway. You know, these proposals from tech companies are mainly geared toward bringing in basically lower paid routine tech workers from abroad to undercut American workers. But it's the kind of thing politically that's very popular in Congress. But one of the reasons it doesn't happen is that the Hispanic caucus vetoes them, not because they're against them, but because they say, look, we have to get an amnesty as part of for illegal immigrants who are here, most of whom are Latin American. And in exchange, we're happy to give Facebook and Google and the rest of you all the cheap labor you want from India, but we have to get our half of the deal. And that kind of push for deal making really does prevent much of anything from happening. And the other thing, the obstacle in getting policy made, and this is a broader issue, is that there have been proposals. There was one under Obama called the Gang of Eight, if you remember that, a number of years ago. Under George W. Bush, there was a big amnesty immigration proposal. They all tried to say, look, we'll amnesty the people who are here in exchange for promises that in the future we'll enforce the law and we won't end up with a whole lot of illegal immigrants again. The problem is, nobody believes those promises because they're lies. In 1986, we had a big deal like that, a big bargain, amnesty for the illegal immigrants who were here, were established in exchange for enforcement, not just border enforcement, but generally enforcement against illegal immigration in the future. The amnesty happened. The enforcement never happened. They welched in the deal. Everybody knows that's what they will do again. And that's one of the reasons nothing can happen, because the political class has no credibility on the immigration issue. Nobody believes their promises.
You know, I've personally been to the border and with the Arizona sheriffs and the Texas sheriffs to see just how bad a crisis it really is. And you see the mules, you see the drug caravans, you see the weapons being brought across. And securing our borders, everybody wants to turn to the compassionate. Well, you're not compassionate. Look at these children coming across. Well, you know, why are they sending their children? Because then they can follow them, hopefully. And why are they sending them with drug dealers and gun smugglers and child trafficking people? You know, there's just so much that is truly negative about what's crossing our border that never seems to get any coverage except the compassionate. You're not compassionate. You don't want these people to have a better way of life. And that's what people will say about your center. That's what they'll say about this show. What do you say to people like that?
There's a couple of things. First of all, just in the micro sense, when they are sending large groups of families or teenagers across the border, the cartels, they don't do the smuggling, but they control parts of the border. So they take a toll or a tax on the smuggling, but they also can tell smugglers where to go. So the smugglers, the drug smugglers, actually use these Central American families as decoys. In other words, they'll send 50 or 100 people across, say, in one part of the border. And they know that the entire Border Patrol people in that area have to descend on them. They got to process them, all of that stuff. The rest of it's wide open so they can then move people across. So for actually the smuggling process of aliens is part of the smuggling process for drugs. In other words, the aliens are a decoy, a distraction, and then the drugs come over somewhere else. And the bigger point here, the response is, we need the, you have to have control over the border, because you can't say, okay, we're going to let in the good illegal aliens, but we're going to keep out the bad ones. Well, how do you know who's who? How do you know who's doing what? Who's taking what kind of drugs? You can't do that kind of thing. You need to have control, even if 99% of the people aren't drug dealers or rapists or criminals. If you don't have control over it, the smaller share who are bad guys are going to be able to get through.
I used to interview Barbara Boxer and Nancy Pelosi and those when I did a show 5 days a week. Yeah. But I used to ask them all the time, so you're so compassionate, then I can go to the border and pick four people and you're just going to let them live with you. I get to pick them and you're going to let them in because you want to let them into the country. So you might as well shelter them. And they're like, no, no way. How do I know they're not a criminal? And I'm like, exactly. And then they're like, well, you're twisting our words. And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, that's what the processing centers are for, to find out if they're criminals. I'm like, you don't know what crimes they committed in some little town in Mexico. Nobody's going to tell you. But I always found it interesting because they're the first ones to say no, yet they're the first ones to judge you and I for being compassionate.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's Margaret Thatcher, I think, once said, socialism is great until you run out of other people's money. Well, it's a similar thing here. You know, compassion is great as long as somebody else has to do the, you know, be compassionate for you and you don't have to pay for it, or you have no conscience. It's not your kids' schools. It's not your neighborhoods. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is rolling in dough. She lives in, you know, a very well-off area in San Francisco. There's no illegal aliens camping in front of her neighborhood. There were no illegal aliens going to school with her kids. And so it's easy to have to be compassionate on somebody else's dime.
It is. My next big question is, with this administration, I understand why the mainstream media is not going to cover it. They're not going to cover the Democrats when they vilify Trump for everything the same way they covered Trump. But he actually put a blackout on the media on the border for safety sakes for the immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, it was remarkable at that press conference. A couple of the reporters did actually start doing some journalism. I mean, one of them said, so when are you going to let us into these Border Patrol stations where you've got these kids stacked up in, you know, in cages? Basically what he said is, no, you can't go see them. I'll let you go see them when I feel like it. I mean, that's what he said. And they were like, you know, thank you, sir. May I have another? I mean, they just took whatever it was he said. And it's outrageous, because what he's afraid of is that everybody will see that he is facing the same problem that, frankly, Trump faced during a spike in border crossings, and that Obama faced. And that is that when you have these teenagers and children being brought over, they're not really unaccompanied because they're brought with smugglers. It's just that the smugglers then tell them, okay, step across the border on your own, turn yourself into the Border Patrol, and you'll magically turn into an unaccompanied minor. Well, those people, those kids have to be, under the law, transferred to a Health and Human Services shelter. The problem is HHS doesn't have space. So they end up backing up in these Border Patrol, remote Border Patrol buildings that aren't built to hold people for any amount of time. So what Obama did, and then Trump did, and now Biden is having to do, is they have to put up chain link dividers to keep the adult illegal immigrants separate from the kids, to keep the 17-year-old boys separate from the 12-year-old girls. These are things you have to do. And when it was Trump, it was kids in cages, kids in cages. It's the end of the world. Now it's Biden, and it's like, well, you know, there are overflow facilities, and they have to do, you know, it's all very understandable. It's complete. The hypocrisy shouldn't even make me angry, because I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, at some point, you kind of have to laugh off the lies and hypocrisy of the other side. But even I get ticked off a little bit at the degree of hypocrisy among the media.
One of the biggest concerns for generations of people is that these people coming into our country from Honduras, from Mexico, from all these other places, they don't have vaccine schedules for kids. I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm not getting the COVID vaccine, but different story, different show. But the fact of the matter is, these kids don't have smallpox, measles, chicken pox. These type of illnesses become prevalent among these children in these communities coming in. I say communities because they come in such a mass number, they could be a small town. And that's been a huge concern. And in a world today where government says our health matters and we have to wear masks and you have to go out and get vaccinated, they're not providing vaccines at these holding facilities. They just turn them loose eventually. And they're put into our society, in our schools, with our kids. This is a real concern for people who understand there's a right way and a wrong way to do things. Why hasn't government ever addressed this?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. In some of these border towns, the Border Patrol has actually arranged with like local volunteer groups, Catholic charities or whatever, to do COVID tests on their own. And then anybody who's positive, they then put them up for a week or two or whatever it is, and then let them go. But there's no requirement that anybody has to do that. There's no requirement that they have to quarantine. And in fact, often enough, they're just dropped off at the bus station, get on a bus, and then, you know, they're gone. Who knows where they are? And so, you know, this really, I mean, we got plenty of COVID here on our own. Obviously, there's almost no question this is contributing to it. But the real issue is one of, you know, of credibility of our governing classes. They're telling us our schools have to be closed, but our borders have to be open. Well, sorry, that's just not right. It just isn't a right. And the fact that this is essentially what they're saying is that illegal immigrants are more important than Americans are. And that's a theme that runs through much of our immigration policy.
You know, I traveled to Washington on January 6th. I was there for the staged hoopla that they did. But it was interesting because a few days before I caught my flight, I got a letter from the airlines that says, hey, you have to have a PCR COVID test when you land in Washington, or you're going to have to quarantine for 14 days. So either have this document with you, or you can't come to Washington, D.C. That was a mandate. Yet here the people in Washington, D.C. are saying, hey, you can come into our country, come into Texas, come into Arizona. We don't care what you have. You don't have to prove any tests. Just come on in, you know, infect people. We don't care. You don't have to quarantine. It's just the, like you say, the hypocrisy of government makes absolutely no sense to any logical thinker. And I always love it how Democrats always like to say, well, you know, the more conservative among us are uneducated rednecks and they don't understand things. And it's like, okay, well, we understand logical thinking. Why don't you? What is the case for this argument?
There really isn't one. Although, I mean, to get inside their head, and I'm not head shrinking anybody. I'm not licensed to practice psychiatry in the state of Virginia. But I think the perspective that a lot of these anti-borders people have is that illegal immigrants, you know, are an oppressed class. In other words, they have essentially, our immigration policy is a kind of affirmative action program for people from Latin America, and that they kind of deserve access to America, maybe more than Americans do. One way one of my colleagues put it is, if you think about everybody in the world, their standard of living from 1 to 10. And if you figure like a blue collar American is maybe an 8 on global standards, probably is true. And then you have somebody from, say, Honduras, who's a 3. If that person comes here and improves his status up to a 5, and that makes Americans, poor Americans, especially, less well off, well, then that's okay, because Americans don't really have a right to be more prosperous than people from abroad. I mean, that's inarguably, in my opinion, the worldview that a lot of the people on the left who are pushing these kind of policies have, that the American government, the American people don't have a right to expect their government to pursue their interests, because their interests are no more special than the interests of anybody else, and maybe even less important than the interests of somebody who's poor in Honduras.
Now, the Center for Immigration Studies, you guys get into a lot of the numbers. Let's get into a little bit of the numbers, because nobody seems to have, and I don't know how anybody could have, a firm grasp on actually how many illegals are in our country. You used to hear Obama say, what was it, 40,000, or there's not that many. You've heard other people say, it's in the hundreds of thousands. I've heard one Republican say it's in the millions. What have you guys found out? How do you come up with your numbers?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a good question about the number of illegal immigrants. Most of the estimates for a long time have been 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants total in the living in the United States. A lot of people are suspicious of that because they say, look, it's been that same number or somewhere in that range for a long time now. And there has been some research suggesting that it's higher. There was one estimate that it was 14. There's another one from, I think, a professor at Yale that it's like 22 million. Our sense is it probably is in the range of 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants total. And the reason it doesn't grow much or shrink much is that, yes, every year there are new illegal immigrants moving here. There's no question about it. But what people don't get is that every year there's people who stop being illegal aliens too. There's churn. And the churn happens because some illegal immigrants just leave, they go home. Some die, not that many, but some. But a lot get green cards every year, become legal. So, and I put that in scare quotes, legal immigrants, because each year's total of legal immigrants, about 1 out of 4 of them are former illegal aliens using the legal immigration system to launder their status. So my point here is that the 10 to 12 million number is probably right, because even though there's always new illegal immigrants coming in one side, there are illegal immigrants leaving the illegal population through, the other door, if you will, so that it's not the same group of people. There's a significant level of churn. So the solution, it seems to me, at least in the short term, is you reduce the number of people joining the illegal population and increase the number of people leaving it. Because, we can always get illegal immigrants to leave. Not everybody, but especially more recent people. We can get some of those people to leave through attrition by actually toughening up enforcement of the law. And then what you could see is a shrinkage in the illegal population. But anyway, that's a long way of saying, I don't think the 22 million, 30 million numbers can be correct. Because if it were really 10 million more people than we thought, you would show up in the school records and the birth records and the death records. You can't really misplace 10 million extra people in a modern society. I mean, maybe China could misplace 10 million people because, it's
in one neighborhood.
It's a rounding error there. But it doesn't work that way in a modern developed society.
Okay, let's get to another number. One of the other numbers is the advocates for illegals say, well, they work, they pay taxes, they put money into the economy. And on the other side, you have the group saying, no, they send most of this money back to family, to Mexico. You know, I've known that they group together and a lot of them live in the same house here to keep costs down. And a lot of their money does go other places. But how much money actually stays in the United States? How do they pay taxes legally if they're not here legally? How's that argument go?
Yeah, everybody pays taxes to some degree. Even tourists, foreign tourists pay some taxes. You know, you're buying a stick of gum, you're paying a sales tax. So illegal immigrants pay a variety of taxes. About half of them, we think, work on the books. So they're actually paying payroll taxes and withholding taxes, although, you know, for income tax, but they, because their incomes are low, they're much more likely to get refunds. So they may not end up actually paying any income tax at all. They also pay, you know, property taxes in their rent, because even if you're a renter, you're paying property tax. So there's a variety of taxes illegal immigrants pay. The issue is not, do they, yes or no, pay taxes? The question is, can the taxes they pay actually cover the services, taxpayer-funded services that they use? In other words, is it a net, are we in the black or in the red? And there is no mathematical way that illegal immigrants in particular, because of their low level of education, can ever pay enough taxes to cover the services they use. It's not because they're lazy. It's not because they're moochers. It's because if you're a Honduran with a sixth grade education, the kind of job you're going to be able to get, however hard you work, is not going to pay a lot of money. Because of that, you're not going to pay a lot in taxes. And because your income is low, you're going to qualify for much more in the way of welfare programs. Illegal immigrants don't generally qualify for most welfare. They do some, but their kids who were born here qualify. And the four-year-old isn't going to the grocery store with the food stamps. Everybody's benefiting from that. So this illegal immigrants are a net drain on taxpayers, not because of any moral fault, but because in a modern society, people with low levels of education, wherever they come from, end up being subsidized by the rest of taxpayers.
And that's the other argument that conservatives and liberals have in Washington, the politics of this immigration issue, is the pro-illegal immigration people say they don't put a drain on services. They don't get Social Security. They don't get welfare. They don't get free hospitalization. It's not putting a drain on our hospitals, unless if you talk to somebody who runs hospitals in California and they tell you they have to shut them down because they can't turn people away. You know, they don't go to the food banks. They're not getting any benefit from being here. They're just here. And then you, on the conservative side, you have people saying, hey, we'd have a lot less here if we stopped throwing breadcrumbs on the beach and having the seagulls flock to us. Because if they know they can be provided for and taken care of, they can get everything they're taken care of and send more money back to Mexico. What's the truth? Is it on either side, or is it somewhere in the middle?
I'd say both of those are not the whole story. The fact is that illegal immigrants individually, as an illegal immigrant, do not qualify for much in the way of welfare. There are some states, localities that do. There is emergency Medicaid, which illegals qualify for, which is childbirth. So almost all children born to illegals are paid for by taxpayers. But the bulk of services, taxpayer-funded services that illegal immigrants use, illegal immigrant households, because that's the way you measure welfare, are collected in the name of their U.S.-born children, whether it's welfare, whether it's food stamps, whether it's Medicaid, housing assistance. And so what some of the libertarians and the leftists, and on immigration, libertarians and left-wingers are basically the same people. I mean, they're allied. They're joined at the hip. What they say is, well, you know, those are U.S.-born kids. They're U.S. citizens. That doesn't count. Well, yes, it does count, because they wouldn't be here if the illegal immigrants hadn't been able to be here. The flip side, though, I think some of the Republican objections are incorrect, because illegal immigrants, generally speaking, don't come here for welfare. And there's just not that many people sitting in Guatemala who are saying, you know, rubbing their hands together and saying, I'm going to get me some of those EBT cards. It doesn't work that way. They're working. They have the same percentage, same likelihood of working as Americans who were born here. But they're just not that educated. And so the kinds, I mean, how much money can you make washing dishes or hanging drywall, you know, sort of the lower level construction jobs or doing basic landscaping? I mean, you know, you have a whole bunch of people living together. They do okay. They scrimp. They send money home like you suggested. But they're just not making much money. And so if there's welfare use, it's because incomes are low. But your point about remittances, in other words, the money sent home, is a good one, because nobody wants to study what share of illegal immigrants who get welfare also send money back home. And there's no question that it's a lot. There's only been one study on this that I have found. I've wanted to do it myself, and there's no way to get the data as far as I can tell. But there's no question that lots of immigrants, legal and illegal, use welfare benefits, food stamps and Medicaid and other things, as a way of freeing up money to send home, you know, to their deadbeat brother-in-law back in Guatemala.
You know, this conversation could go on for days. I appreciate Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies, Executive Director, for coming on today on Viewpoint, the news magazine. And we could go into crime statistics. We can go into where we're going to go, and we'll have to do a follow-up on that. But where can they go to learn what the Center for Immigration Studies is doing?
We are online at cis.org. That's our website. And we have a blog with new postings every day, CIS as in studies, cis.org. And for people with a taste for snark and sarcasm, I'm on Twitter at Mark S. Krikorian. S as in Stephen, Mark S. Krikorian. And I'm probably tweeting too much there, but it's immigration as well as other things.
Way to pull a Trump on us there, Mark. We thank you so much for joining this first half of Viewpoint, the news magazine. Next hour, we're going to have Lieutenant Randy Sutton joining us from the Wounded Blue organization. We're going to be talking guns, what's going on in America with guns. We appreciate that you support the sponsors you're going to hear. They're what's keep voices like this on the air. Share this show. Make sure you get it out to every friend, every neighbor. Make sure you tweet it out, retweet it, re-LinkedIn it, redo whatever you need to get this show out there. This is where you're going to come, and Center for Immigration Studies is one of the best places to go for actual immigration facts. You could tell we didn't have a biased conversation. And once again, thank you so much for joining us today.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called shoptotheright.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together, we need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. there haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Fighting every day against the internet monopolies that are trying to stifle our right to free speech and freedom of assembly. 5 years on the air and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. Our second guest today is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, 35 years in police force, author of the book A Cop's Life, and founder of Wounded Blue. I'm thoroughly honored to have you here. I respect the people in blue. Let me thank you for your service. And we're going to be talking guns. You know, a lot of people said we don't have to worry about gun grabs in America anymore. And then shootings happened again. What do we got to worry about this time? An executive order from the Biden-Harris administration that's going to force buybacks of my ARs that I refuse to do? What do you think's coming, Lieutenant Sutton?
Well, from what I've been observing, I don't think that there's any doubt there's going to be some type of gun grab, for lack of a better word, but I do believe that there is movement afoot by, unfortunately, a very, very liberal, progressive Democratic Party who is drunk with power now to achieve some of the goals that they have wanted for years. And that includes a true assault on the Second Amendment rights of Americans.
You know, I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist. I look at everybody out there saying, isn't it interesting that whenever they want to talk guns and whenever the Democrats, the liberals are in charge and they want to talk seizing guns or taking guns or taking away Second Amendment rights, that shootings tend to happen. But when I look at government in 1955, mid-1950s, 1960s, in St. Louis, our government decided that they would conduct secret chemical testing in a St. Louis impoverished neighborhood. So they put these big motorized chemical blowers up on top of roofs and used citizens as test subjects that died later. In the 90s, they finally admitted to it. It came out. In 94, the government said they were part of a biological weapons program. And St. Louis was chosen because it bore some resemblance to Russian cities. So any government that would spray biological weapons over St. Louis in the 1960s, I tend not to trust that they wouldn't orchestrate shootings to get the political agenda they want done. I don't know if you ever heard that story. It's out there. It's been declassified by Judicial Watch. They admitted to it in Congress in 94. They paid reparations to people who died from cancer. It was just a tragic thing that the government decided to do.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to doubt that. I mean, there have been other programs of very dubious nature that the government has done, including experimenting on people with hallucinogens, what they did to black soldiers in the 40s and 50s. So it doesn't surprise me that there would be something of this nature that finally gets declassified. My guess is there's a lot more that we don't know about. But I got to give you a little pushback on a government that
wants to control the population and the gun laws by setting loose a shooter. I'm not buying that one.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a believer of it. I'm saying those are the stories going around on social media. There are a large portion of conservative constitutionalists that believe that this is a false flag. Crimes are going to happen. Let's face the facts. You're going to have people with agendas that are going to go out and commit murders. You're going to have people that are going to go out and shoot. Tragedies happen. I believe with you that it's almost impossible to tell. But when Vegas happened, you had the groups of people saying there's no way one shooter could have got all those guns up there, could have created that kind of chaos. You know, you have the 9/11ers who believe that no planes hit, even though I saw them with my own eyes. It's just interesting, the timing of shooters. But criminals aren't always stupid either. They see an agenda that they might love, and they can go out and say, okay, well, I'm going to go commit a crime so horrific that I will be the national stage for these new gun laws. I'm going to get the message across that anybody could do it, and I'm going to be that sacrificial lamb for this movement. So who knows motivation behind anything? It's tragic. My heart goes out to the victims' families. It's just terrible that it happens. But it cannot be denied that they also utilize this as a way to take over and use this for political purposes.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The first thing that came out of the president's mouth was gun control as a result of this terrible tragedy. And this isn't anything unusual. I mean, isn't this the same cry we hear every time there is a tragic incident like this?
It is.
We always, we want answers. You know, as human beings, we want answers. The Route 91 shooting here in Vegas, the worst mass shooting in history, is a prime example of that. We are still in the dark as to why this maniac, who was seemingly a normal human being, turned into the monster that he did. And the harsh reality is that we'll probably never know. And this is not the first time that a mass shooter's legacy has been one of, we have no idea why. And it, you know, that as human beings, that not only offends us, it scares us, because these people are the boogeyman. They are the they are everyone's worst fear coming to life.
You know, and we'll never know why it happened in Colorado. We'll never know why Columbine happened. We'll never know the motivations behind sick people. But there's been sick people throughout history. And sure, taking away somebody's constitutional rights is not how to fix sick people.
The irony here is that the only defense against a monster like this, who comes into a soft target like a grocery store, the only response is a bullet. Now, if you take away citizens' abilities to defend themselves, which is exactly what this insane thinking on the part of agenda-driven politicians, it's absurd. But you have a population that is exceedingly led down the garden path by its leadership. And you know, you're seeing people who would normally, you would think, have some common sense and can look at things objectively. And you're seeing, wait a minute, they're drinking the Kool-Aid in a big way. And if you don't think that this government is capable of draconian laws, better think again, because they're going to push it as far as they possibly can.
And this is a sad part. This is a scary part. What people don't know is how different sheriffs will react, how different police forces will react, how different governors will react, how states will react. I mean, I don't know many people in Utah, where I'm from, that doesn't have what is classified by the left as an assault rifle.
Right.
There's probably 10 in my house alone with my kids and wife. But we love shooting. We love target practice. We love knowing that we can defend ourselves. But we're not the type that's going to go out and commit a crime. But we can defend ourselves if a crime happens. It's not like we carry them in our car. You know, I have a little gun for my car. But how are governors, how are the military, what are police going to do if Vice President Kamala Harris gets her way? And I say her because this is her gun agenda that we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, we've already seen a major schism in law enforcement between the leadership that is in law enforcement. So let's talk a little bit about law enforcement leadership for a second, because it's important to know some things that are not generally known. There are approximately 18,000 different police agencies in this country. 18,000. There's just under a million law enforcement officers to police 340 million people. It's not a big number. But when you have 18,000 different police departments, that means you have 18,000 different police leaders. That's sheriffs, that's police chiefs, that's special agents in charge. So you have a huge number of law enforcement leaders, all who have different values, all who have different jurisdictions, all who have different bosses. And what are the political ramifications to those chiefs when it comes down to enforcing some unpopular law or even some illegal law? Because remember, just because it is legislated doesn't mean that it can't be and won't be struck down at a later time. So you have all of these different issues involved. And then when an edict comes down, look, mask laws, perfect example, right? You have a number of law enforcement, especially constitutional sheriffs, who say it's not illegal. You can't arrest somebody for not wearing a mask because it's not illegal. But on other areas, you have cities creating an ordinance or just making it up as they go along. And the city leadership is putting the cops right in the middle of enforcing an edict. And then when it goes bad, who do they blame? They blame the police.
You know, it's really interesting. I took my family before COVID, before the mask issues. I was in Disneyland, and I was sitting off a ride the family was on, and there was a gentleman sitting next to me, and I was wearing, you know, a Trump shirt. And he's like, "Oh, really? You like Trump?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Oh, I'm in law enforcement here in California." I said, "Oh, that's really cool. I thank you for your service. You know, I respect that." And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You know, believe it or not, there's so many of us that are conservative, but all the upper officers that are political appointments are, you know, liberal appointed, just going to do whatever the governor and the mayor says. So how do we combat that?" And we talked constitution and you know, your legal authority to obey a bad law, an illegal law. And if you swear an oath to the Constitution, your oath to protect that. And so we had a great conversation, these people in California. But there are so many law enforcement agencies, even in these liberal states, that believe in the Constitution, believe in these laws. And even this guy was out of L.A. I mean, not the safest place to be a police officer, but he believes people have the right to guns. Yet nobody above him, and he was a lieutenant, nobody above him would ever support his opinion.
Yeah, of course, because if when you're appointed, and this is the difference between sheriffs and chiefs. Okay, a sheriff is an elected position. That sheriff is going to be there for 4 years, no matter what, no matter how unpopular he is or how unpopular his or her decisions are. However, a chief of police gets their marching orders from the mayor and council. And if they don't go by the, if they don't toe the line, they're not the police chief anymore. And it is, it's despicable what we have seen in the watering down of effective police leadership because of politics. And politics more rampant now and more intrusive now than ever before. And I've been doing this game a long, long time. And there's always been politics involved in leadership. Always, 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 or always will be. But now we're seeing it's almost like a disease that has infected the leadership ranks. If they are scared to death to think on their own and to follow their own morality, if you will, because they're so afraid of not having their job the next day. And it's a very real problem. The average police chief, I think, lasts about 2 years because of the politics. So it's, we all want to sustain ourselves. We all want to keep our jobs. We all want to, provide for our families. And if you're threatened with that by a hardware store clerk who happens to be the mayor, well, what do you do? And it's really, it's making for a very difficult time for law enforcement leadership.
Randy, I really appreciate it. Now, you have your own show, right? I always do cross-sharing. People need to listen if they want to learn more about the guns. I'm sure you're going to be majorly on top of all this legislation that's going. This is Viewpoint, the news magazine. But what's your show on America Out Loud?
My show is called Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. And it's right here on America Out Loud. If the listeners and viewers want to see a little bit more of it, come to my Facebook page at Randy Sutton, the voice of American law enforcement, and reach out to me there.
And share this. Share the show. Show Randy Sutton. Share Randy Sutton's show, Lieutenant Randy Sutton. Because if we're going to get some sanity back, we need to educate people. We educate people through conversations. Randy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm going to make sure I tune in, and I'll share it every time I see it on Twitter, and I hope every other listener does too. Thank you. We are in a precarious situation in America. A revolution's happening. It's not a conservative revolution. It's the socialist revolution. And it's happening without a shot being fired. We have, like I said at the start of the hour, we have chaos on our borders. We have things happening in our nation that we have to wake up, pay attention, and get involved with. And if we don't, we're just going to lose the last little bit of liberty we have. We're no longer a constitutional republic. I hate to tell you that we're not going to save America through Washington. We have to save it on the state level. States have to start taking power and influence back from the federal government. We have a federal government that believes they can operate unilaterally, yet they criticize the former president, and they have quadrupled, if not 100 times more executive orders than he ever had. We have a nation that just believes the mainstream media. And that's what America Out Loud's about. We're about getting you facts and information. So support our sponsors. Go to our bookstore. My book, Origins of Liberty, is a great place to start. Knowing that your liberty came from God and no man can take it away. You can find that in the bookstore. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you listen to Lieutenant Randy Sutton's show. Make sure you pay attention to the Center for Immigration Studies. And make sure you get involved. Thank you so much for Viewpoint. This Sunday, this is Tim signing out.